Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble Mailbag. The importance of managers and team meetings and the orders of the day. It's Saturday, 3rd of February. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
Hello, everybody. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you, too.
Well, thank you, sir.
What a day.
Rocking all week with you, Jim.
Well, indeed. But this is the best day.
Saturday night's all right for rambling.
It is.
And morning. Yeah. Or afternoon, whenever you listen
to
this.
Up to you.
It is indeed. And of course, if you want to get involved with the mailbag, you can tweet us on X at Football Ramble, message us on Instagram at Football Ramble, and of course, you can email us, show@footballramble.com.
I would just say, if you are going to choose X, formerly known as Twitter, as your mode of communication, you're going to have to, you're not playing the percentages there, because there's so much good stuff on there that you might not be seeing among all the other great content.
That's right.
Not just great content, great hashtag content.
A lot of hashtags.
Which just comes from the leadership, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
It trickles down.
Yeah, yes, it does, indeed. Actually, top down.
Jim, you've got an email.
I do. Speaking of leadership, funnily enough, Kyle said, "Hello, gents. After all the fallout from Jurgen Klopp's exit last Friday, I had a manager-related question I've wanted to get off my chest for a while. It feels like managers' roles in modern football get massively overblown by the way media cover the game, and I'll include you guys in this too."
isn't it?
"The disproportionate amount of airtime and column inches given over to managers rather than players. Now, I'm not saying that this is the case with Klopp, but do you think football fans and media overestimate the impact of managers in football? Thank you."
Thank you. He does end by saying thank you. Yeah. He insults us.
Yeah.
And then he ends by admittedly being very polite. And he started with "hello, gents," and he ended with "thank you." So we'll give him a pass.
Yeah, I think so.
That's fair enough.
What do you reckon, Luke? What are your immediate thoughts on this one?
I don't see how this can be an accusation that stands up, really. And the reason for that is because
Kyle's full of crap.
They are. Because Kyle, you are quite simply, my man, full of shit. And I would thank you to not communicate with us ever again.
Muted.
Yeah. Because they're a figurehead, both symbolically and literally, for the club. Mm-hmm. And if you think about how any kind of meaningful communication that isn't, you know, around, you know, a post-match interview with a player who's just scored or whatever, does come through them. I think there's a really interesting debate to have around the role at the top level and how it's changed and how basically the skill set needed to be successful at it is different, i.e. so if you take the two Manchester clubs and you take Sir Alex Ferguson when he ran things at Man United, the sport was still kind of small enough for him to be able to run every aspect and be, you know, on the phone to a scout down the park to 100 miles away 1 minute and then speaking to Eric Cantona the next and then having a conversation with the board about a commercial deal, whatever, the next, he would be involved very much all of that. You transpose that across to say what Pep Guardiola does now, and he's really, you know, I mean, look at his coaching team, for example, or the team he has to run across coaching, scouting, medical, and other areas. His team is north of like 50 people, and that's not including the players. That's before you bring the players into it.
And that's a particularly big example of that.
But I think
managers have teams now
at the top level, and absolutely, and they are all in their own way geared toward the success of the men's first team.
Yeah.
And Guardiola is the spiritual and practical figurehead of that. Everything at that level is running through the manager. So I think it's really difficult to get on board with an opinion that says their role's overstated. Of course, you know, when the players get out on the pitch and they're doing individual things and they're scoring goals or they're saving penalties or whatever, he can't control that, but up to and including the tactical kind of discussions, which of course with someone like Guardiola are very, very detailed, he really is the kind of guy. And so I don't really know, I would probably flip it back on Kyle, though I can't because he's not here, but if he was here, I'd say, well...
And we invited him here, the coward.
And he wouldn't turn up. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't want it. He's just big on the computer screen. That's all he is. Yeah. Keyboard warrior.
But do email in, though, if you
I wonder why we're not getting many questions. No, I think... I would flip it back and, you know, hand over to Jim maybe and say, look, if it's not the manager, who is going to get this? Who is going to get this coverage? Because it's an incredibly, it's the most popular sport in the world. It's an incredible amount of coverage, obviously, and it's going to be covered in some way. So, I mean, who else is it going to be? The buck stops with them, of course it does. And people, and it's not just one way or the other. The final thing I'll say is that yes, they carry the can if shit goes wrong, absolutely. But we always talk about successful manager in the terms of the trophies they've won. We don't say that Pep Guardiola was the manager of Man City when Kevin De Bruyne won the Champions League. We say Pep Guardiola's won X amount of Champions Leagues as a manager. And so it does cut both ways. It's just hard to see how else you would cover it, I suppose, is my answer.
I think, so Kyle isn't saying that we shouldn't have managers, obviously, but it is tempting to look at this.
I'm reading between the lines, though, Jim.
But it is tempting to look at a question like this and come to that conclusion, isn't it? I guess he's talking about how, if their influence is overblown. And actually... There has been research done, and it's very, very difficult to do research into a situation like this because you can't have a control group of players who play without a manager. So you have to try and find kind of data that is useful in different ways. And I think it's really at the top end and the bottom end of any league is where it is most prevalent, that the manager's influence shows itself to be as important as it is. Because apparently, in terms of researching things like the new manager bounce, often it's a little bit of a myth, and actually sacking a coach doesn't often, if you look at sort of longer term results, necessarily affect the form of teams as much as you might think. But again, we come to these extreme examples. I would Pep Guardiola is a great example. Jurgen Klopp, if you look at where Liverpool were before him and the fact they'd had this situation where they hadn't won the Premier League since it began, and it was a real, real problem for the club. He's now taken them past that, and that is a huge, huge, significant thing. You get players that come in and sort of, or managers rather, that come in and revolutionise the culture of a club. But at the other end of it, you have your Sam Allardyces, where he, aside from the situation with West Brom, obviously, sorry for bringing that up, Sam, he will save you from relegation.
Well,
you
know,
he's
United.
A specialist. And Leeds as well. He is a specialist, and he can come in and he can sort that out. And, you know, that's real, isn't it? We saw him do that many, many times. So that influence is there. I don't think there's any credence to the idea that, you know, the players can just sort of get on with it themselves. And I'm sure... If you know, if it's 11 men against 11 in some friendly somewhere, Man City could probably beat some Premier League teams without a manager. But it's just not sustainable, is it?
Yeah.
And if you look at the prevalence of set-piece coaches as well, which are all directed by the manager, and teams who make a big, big point of these like set variables within games and how a manager's influence can you know, make a huge difference at the end of the season in a very practical, tangible way.
Yeah, I mean, he's called the manager for a reason, you know. And
although some of them are head coaches now, I guess.
Oh, that's very true, actually. Yeah, right.
And you do hear about, we were talking recently, weren't we, about Jurgen Klinsmann at his time at Bayern, where the players were secretly meeting to discuss tactics without him. So you do get managers where they are more about motivating players.
Yes, and these are just different styles. I mean, I think with managers, if they are encouraging players to do that, that's because that manager feels, you would hope, that it's the right thing to do with those players. Mm. You don't get the same set of players with the same qualities at every single football
club. We've seen it with Ten Hag at Man United now.
Yeah, you come into the situation, and so to say, it's a bit like saying, well, does a managing director at corporate level, I mean, what are they worth? Well, I mean, there's so many different companies around the world. I know they sell different things, but it's almost a bit like that. You know, the situation at Manchester United is very different to the situation at Manchester City, as is Chelsea, as is, you know, Liverpool, Fulham, blah, 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 blah. Ferguson was a great delegator. Mm. He delegated a lot of stuff. That is a part of being a manager.
Yeah.
You know, so that is important. If you don't delegate, you will burn out probably. Or you may not find a particular skill set of someone being utilised in the camp. They may be a bit unhappy, or you might not get in the full ticket on a particular area. There's so much. I think with managers, yes, it can appear sometimes with certain football clubs that it doesn't matter who goes in there, it's a bit of a shit show, because the manager is not the owner, the CEO, the striker, the goalkeeper, all these things. There's a lot of moving parts, but the role is very, very important. We've talked about Iraola on the previous show. I mean, would Bournemouth be in the situation they were in if Iraola wasn't there? Probably not. I mean, you had a few people, Scott Parker being one that leaps to mind, and one or two others who had a go, and it wasn't quite there. A manager can make a huge difference. Emery at Villa is a massive example.
When juxtaposed with what Gerrard is doing.
Exactly,
before,
yeah. And I understand there's been a few more signings, but I mean, you know, they made those signings, or at least they either wanted those players, and if they didn't specifically say that player, they'd have said that type of player, or if they've been given that type of player, whatever the situation is behind the scenes with sporting directors, the fact that, again, they have to manage the situation, they have to bring that player in, and they have to make that player a part of the squad. So I think that, you know, sometimes footballers nowadays can, it's a bit, yeah, they can sometimes be accused of maybe not playing for a manager, da da da. That's probably always been the case, but I think now, yeah, the emphasis is heavily on a manager, but I think that's largely justified. I mean, you could say, does an individual make a huge difference to a team? It does feel like at Manchester United, you know, you could put anybody in there and actually would it improve it significantly? But we know with some examples in history that a single player going into a side, it depends
on that. But Carl's question was about whether
it's overblown
by the media.
I don't think it is.
I don't think it is either.
Yeah.
And I think also another area of looking at it would be all managers are leaders, right? They've chosen to, they've ordinarily risen to the top of their field as players to start with, or they've done enough as players to go, right, now I want to become a manager. And in order to do that, you need to be a leader. You need to get people to listen to you.
Yes.
All the kind of basic understandings of what leadership means applies to being a manager at kind of any level, really. So the majority of them, therefore, have like some charisma, which lends itself to leadership. For good or bad.
Yeah,
it could be, you may feel like, you know, Mourinho's charisma can be very toxic. But they're naturally going to be pretty outgoing and charismatic, which lends itself to coverage, which lends itself to column inches.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, players can be quite charisma-free and quite boring, or we just don't know enough about them.
Or they've been told to be.
Exactly.
And managers are always up in front of the media,
aren't they? So they're always going to be a lightning rod for that. I'd also like to bring... I agree with what Marcus has said in terms of, no, I don't think it's overblown, but I do think it's an interesting question.
And I bring
another angle into it. I wonder now, at the lower level of football in this country, given the state of how clubs are and how football is and how, you know, there's such basket cases financially and the deck is stacked against them so much on things like ability to retain players and finances, I wonder now whether it's actually possible to succeed as a lower level manager in a sustained way.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is that, you know, can you think of a possibility where one manager takes a team in League Two, revolutionises it with their ideas and leadership and charisma and way of looking at the game, and takes them through the leagues consistently. To me, I don't have examples in front of me. I might have missed someone obvious, but I don't think I have. To me, it feels like it's going less and less likely as the years go on. And the reason I think that's important and relevant to this question is because maybe it's only at the top level now they are really important. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all convinced that they are. But at the lower league level, what you just tend to see now, it's just managers losing their jobs all the time. Mm-hmm. Right, quick, manager's gone. We're not happy with that after a year or whatever. And if you look at the list of current serving managers, they're not really there very long at the lower level. We have a quick reset, we have a refresh, and we try and get another year out of someone else. And then we go again and we go again. And the whole thing is based on survival, not just league position, but in finances and stuff like that. So maybe, actually, because of the way football is run in this country now, interestingly enough, Carl's hit on something, but not perhaps in the way that he imagined, by saying that I don't know of anyone who would take a job at that level who can actually give himself the importance that we would traditionally associate with a manager at, say, League Two level, because the deck is just so stacked against them.
Yeah.
Do you understand the point I'm making?
Yeah, I do. Paul Tisdale's an interesting example of that, but perhaps it backs up your point. I mean, he was at Exeter City. He of the interesting hat.
Yeah, I know who he is,
For those who maybe don't remember, he was at Exeter City for, how long was he there? Like 12 years?
Yeah, Gareth Ainsworth's been at yeah, at
but then,
for
but
time.
After that, he then goes to MK Dons. He's there for about a year. Bristol Rovers, about a year. Stevenage, about a year. Mm. You know, it's funny, isn't it?
And also, we have to talk about success as we actually mean success, because all the years Paul Tisdale had at Exeter, they came runners up in League Two. And that's pretty, I think he took them up from the conference as well, I think. Mm. That's pretty much all he did.
Yeah,
but I'm not criticising, I'm just saying that, like, it's hard to see how managers are that important at that level, because they're just not able to do anything. They've got no room for manoeuvre.
But the reason why they're important is, in any given circumstance or situation or area of society, if you have a group of people, someone must lead it.
Correct.
Yeah. They absolutely must. I mean, have you ever been to a wedding where you've not had an MC? Mm-hmm. It can still be a good wedding, don't get me wrong. I've been to a very good wedding which didn't have an MC. But when you have an MC, it's a bit of a silly example.
Do you want to put your phone number at the bottom there for the job? Because you are available, aren't you?
Yeah. You know, look, I'm on X.
MC spell
me X.
The thing about
MC
spell is he can do it all. Not only do the master of ceremonies, he'll toast, he'll do your number.
I'll MC over some decks.
He'll sing New York, New York. And who's that at the back? It's Nick Hewer. He's turned up.
All that,
yeah, natural at it.
But you even in that kind of situation, if you don't have someone leading, there's always, oh, where are we going, what are we doing now, you know, to avoid that, you always need someone to lead. So
we focus too much on them though, Jim? Final word to you.
I would say no, we do not. I think actually we possibly don't have that much insight into what the day-to-day running of a club is, even with all of the fly on the wall documentaries we've seen, because I don't want to give too much away. We all know that Eddie Howe used to get to Bournemouth at like 5 o'clock in the morning or whatever it was and be the last to leave. That's quite a common thing. We don't know exactly what it is they do. Probably a lot of video analysis, etc., etc. I think they are absolutely vital.
And they're setting the tone. The best ones are setting the tone. We talk about Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola revolutionising clubs or whatever. What does that actually mean? What it means is you go in, you set the tone, you set the standard, and you say, this is a standard you all have to meet. I'm leading you by example.
Yep.
You follow me and we do it this way, and this is the minimum I expect. And if you don't meet that, you're not going to be around here very long.
Yeah, indeed. And I mean, it's like an 80-hour week they work or something. Mm. It is insane.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
This from Sean, who got in touch with us on X, or some of you still call it Twitter.
Never heard of it.
What dressing room, team meeting, etc., would you like to have seen as an observer over the years? My example would be the Roy Keane versus Mick McCarthy bust-up before the 2002 World Cup.
That's a classic.
Yeah, that is.
Although that was actually on a coach, wasn't it? If I remember.
I think
makes it better.
Was there not in the restaurant as well? And they were having dinner.
Might be a series of events.
Series of bust ups.
I worked with Matt Holland once, who's a delightful chap, and asked him about this, and he said, "Yeah, everyone was like proper heads down, don't want to make eye contact with either of them, yeah. but also."
Love it.
Trying not to laugh.
Yeah.
And especially Matt Holland, because he very much benefited from Roy Keane not being there. He's got an ugly goal against Cameroon.
Yeah. Oh, guy in front of me in my position, he was like genuinely world class.
Yeah. I think actually at one point, Matt Holland leaned over to Roy Keane.
Nigged at him, yeah.
And remember, he called you a wanker.
Yeah. Oi. I've heard Mick McCarthy don't respect you.
So that's an obvious one. So again, perhaps a moment or moments where a team dressing room or a team meeting, what would you have liked to have been a fly on the wall at, Jim? You seem like you've got an answer ready to go.
I do. I'll paint a picture. I think you'll all be on board. Stoke have just lost 2-0 at Arsenal. It's December. Tony Pulis isn't happy and he's cancelled the Christmas party.
Yeah.
Everyone's getting ready. Everyone's getting changed.
Uh-huh.
Some people are naked. James Beattie has taken umbrage with the Christmas party being
cancelled.
That's
what he lives for.
He's what he lives for. He's piped up. Tony Pulis has simply stuck the nut on him while stark bollock naked.
It'll be a great moment.
Jim, it's not my answer, but I thought about that as well. I'm glad you said that.
Just to witness the physicality of it, like separately from how funny it is.
Old man hard as well.
Yeah.
Baseball cap's gone backwards to it.
Maybe he's still it on.
On James Beattie's forehead, there was a mark backwards that said, just do it.
Yeah.
From the baseball
super,
cap.
Super.
And special credit, by the way, as his name's come up for the first time in ages, to James Beattie for being a former Southampton striker, and the worst thing he's done since has been banned for drink driving. No, compared to your Matt Letizia's, your Ricky Lamberts, he's actually dodged a bullet there.
Yeah.
If I was him in a position as an ex-Southampton striker and all I was known for was getting the nut stuck on me by
an aggressive man
who occasionally loses his temper.
You once said he looked like an angry snowman.
I didn't say that. Somebody around here said,
might be Pete, someone around here,
someone from around these parts.
I need to investigate this further, Marcus, and I'm sure, with Jim. So you're a fly on the wall here.
Mm-hmm.
You're not literally a fly on the wall, because you wouldn't be able to process what's happening. You're in the dressing room.
Yeah.
What are you? Are you naked as well, showering, or are you just watching people in the shower, which could be seen as a bit weirder?
Uh-huh.
No, what's happening?
So
glory hole involved?
I've got lost in the Emirates. No, I want to see the whole thing. I want to
proper
full on panoramic view.
Yeah.
So I've got lost in the Emirates deliberately, and I've snuck in to the
no one's questioning
room.
It,
no one's questioning. Well, because there's too much going on, isn't there?
Well, they're also going, that guy's obviously an athlete, so he deserves
exactly,
to be.
Exactly, yeah. So are they doing some sort of modelling shoot around here after the game?
With him and Giroud.
Exactly.
Odd that he's wearing an Arsenal kit, though.
Is Pulis naked at the time as well?
I believe so. It makes very little sense for Pulis to have been naked, doesn't it?
He could have just marched in there, couldn't he? Just been like, boom. Shut the fuck up.
Cancel the Christmas party. No. None of you mentioned this.
The party's... Oh, the bad news beats. The party's back on, but you're going to be an A&E pal, so you're going to miss it anyway.
What an interest that would be. Right. It'd be like the Sheriff of Nottingham in Prince of Thieves. Right. Call off Christmas. Yeah. What are you looking at? Boom.
But I can see that happening. I can see that happening.
I'll tell you what, though. It's a great answer, because if indeed, however it played out, I think we all wish we'd witnessed it.
Yeah.
From behind bulletproof glass.
I remember when I was looking into this, and I'll give you my answer next, but I was looking into this. I was saying to Marcus on the phone yesterday, I looked it up and it did actually happen. Mm. At one point when he was Leicester City manager, Nigel Pearson had James McArthur by the throat on the touchline, pinned.
Yeah, and obviously McArthur played for Palace at the time.
Yeah. He's doing really, that in plain really sight.
Yeah, but we did witness that. That's what I'm saying,
what does he get up to behind closed doors?
Sure. I don't want to witness that.
Didn't he beat a pack of dogs to death in Bulgaria?
Yeah, in Germany. Bulgaria, was it?
Yeah. It was
chasing him.
Yeah.
Around that neck of the woods.
It was some part of Europe. Mine would probably be just present during the month or so in 2011 where Real Madrid under Jose Mourinho were playing Pep Guardiola's Barcelona quite a lot, including those Champions League semi-finals, which had everything. Yeah, that messy goal on the first leg, and annoyed Cristiano Ronaldo, who was just fuming that Mourinho wouldn't let him attack. And I just remember the stakes being so extraordinarily high.
Yeah.
And you know, you had the whole thing with Mourinho poking Tito Villanova in the eye. Mourinho was just basically at large.
Was that in the month though? The poking.
It
in
might
the
not
eye.
Have been.
But still, it's
the same energy.
You have to mention it.
And I just think it was so good, because Barcelona at that time seen as possibly the greatest club side we've ever seen.
Yep.
Yet Real Madrid did run them really close with this kind of properly opposite anti-football mirror image of it on purpose, which you don't see very often.
Yeah.
And it was a proper good versus evil type battle. There were so many heated exchanges to the point where Del Bosque was like, we need to sort this out because of the national side and everything among all the players. And I just think some of the stuff, I don't have anything specific, but it's not a big flight of fancy to say some of the stuff Mourinho would have been saying in that dressing room for Real Madrid would have been extraordinary, Des.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I've pretty much heard everything, but I think that would be extraordinary, Des. Don't you?
Yeah, a lovely sort of Richard Keys reference there.
I've just thought of another example.
Doesn't involve, it involves one former footballer.
Yeah.
I think that's a great answer. That month, or whatever it was, genuine. I was about to say extraordinary.
Because they met in the league, didn't they, between the Champions League fixtures,
They played four.
They played in the cup as well, and then Madrid won the cup.
And it was a clash that I don't think we've really kind of seen before in that it happened in such a concentrated spell. What I would say is, like, I'm glad we did it never again. I think after that month was over, I was like, I'm done with the Classic.
I think it took its toll on Pep Guardiola.
Mourinho as well. It did.
I would say as well, a bit of a rogue shout, but it's kind of getting away from the question, but just as a conversational point. I was re-watching this yesterday, because this is the answer I was going to give for the show today. And I kind of came away thinking that messy second goal on the first leg at the Bernabeu.
Was that when he roasted them?
Yeah. I just kind of ended up thinking, I think that might be the best goal ever.
When you look at the context of it.
It's a big shout.
Just because it's the very apex of what's ever been achieved at club football. And it's in a big derby game away from home. Mm-hmm. The stakes are high. It's a Champions League semi-final. It's already so high as a level, yet he's able to lift himself again above that and kind of stand alone.
The context is crucial.
Massively.
Because people might say, but in this game...
It's a brilliant goal, though.
Yeah, it was...
And I remember at the time thinking, this is going to be a really attritional, good versus evil, tough set of fixtures to get through. Mm. I wanted Barcelona to win. Of course, they wanted to beat Man United in the final. They did win. And for Messi to bust that out, we're not just talking about doing it in a standard league game. It was an incredible thing to witness.
It's the individual brilliance of just like, no, I'm going to score now.
Yeah, I'm better than all of you.
It must be devastating as a Real Madrid defender there as well. Like, you cannot keep this guy out. You'd think, this guy's a spirit. Like, this hell, you can't stop this.
I mean, they just then sort of tried to boot them all over the
place. Well, Ramos was trying to do that all game. It must have been like playing against a ghost. Basically.
But I think, though, that it's a good answer because to be privy of what was going on in that dressing room at the time, because those Real Madrid players are going, well, hang on a minute, you know, we like to play attacking football. Also, you've got the club directors and all them saying, this isn't us, this siege mentality. We're Real Madrid, you know, we're perfect. We're everyone loves us. We play football the way it's meant to be played. And Mourinho's going, no, they're the current, and it just the tension and everything would be so dramatic. It would be incredible. My answer would be, I would have loved to have been in Leicester City's dressing rooms and team meetings when they won the league, just to see how it played out. Because that whole kind of don't mention the league title, you know, we're aiming for 40 points. Oh, we're in Europe. Just how it would have played out. You know, Ranieri was very, very good in the press, but you know, if he's saying right, nobody mention the league title. Jamie Vardy's in there. Mm. Is he just going league title? Yeah, every now and then. Do you know what I mean? Like, what's going on there? How they then change the style to get all those 1-0 wins and get them over the line. What is it? You know, how are the players reacting? Are they nervous? Are they excited? Are they kind of? I would have been absolutely fascinated by that. And the other one, if I'm going to pick up a specific moment, if you like, a particular or a specific dressing room, I would have loved to have been in the dressing room of the AC Milan side that lost the final to Liverpool, a 3-3, and then they lost on pens, to see the half-time dressing room and the full-time dressing room. At half-time, you go in 3-0 up, you have shat all over them. You know, are they overconfident? Are they quite calm? You know, what's the vibe? I'd imagine Ancelotti probably kept them quite calm. And then just to see it, because in Andrea Pirlo, in his book, he said after that game, he said football didn't make sense anymore. He said he even thought about quitting. Now, it was probably a very fleeting thought.
He did, and he said, and he followed up by saying that he came to the conclusion that actually you can only control a certain amount of controllables, and that for 83 minutes of it, Milan were fine, and that's just how it goes. But it's easy to say that when you're Ancelotti, who's won everything a million times.
Well, that was Ancelotti, but Pirlo was the one I was saying.
Oh, Pirlo, sorry, okay.
But you're right, you know, similar sort of...
Pirlo was a bit of an attention seeker, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's not
true.
Not quick football, is
but
he?
Just to see the contrast of, definitely. Of those two, interesting.
Absolutely, and I remember getting an insight from Jamie Carragher when I interviewed him once about that's half-time, and Jamie Carragher is like a real... Whatever you make of his punditry and everything, he absolutely loves the game. He's like obsessed with football. He's obsessed with stats. He grew up reading like World Soccer magazine and all the cover to cover and all this kind of thing. And he said at the dressing room at halftime, he wasn't really listening to what Benitez was saying. He was just saying, "Wow, like this is the Champions League final. I never ever thought I'd get to this level.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful to be here. I just don't want to be one of those people who becomes like a pub quiz question.
Yes.
What was the biggest defeat in the Champions League final?
He said he remembered Milan beating
4-0.
Barcelona 4-0 and he was...
He said to me, if someone had walked up to me now and said 3-1 defeat, I'd have taken it all day long. We were dead on
that. And you would have done.
We were done.
Yeah. So we interviewed him for the book club as well, and he said similar. I was telling him that friends of mine, we're all texting each other during the game, and there was a lot of it going around. I remember people saying Liverpool was still going to win, and not Liverpool fans as well. There was, even at half time where I was, there was this sense like, if anyone's going to get back into it, it is them. And I put that to him, and he was like, it was not like that in the dressing room.
I'll be honest,
we weren't thinking like that at all.
I wasn't thinking like that. Everybody I was watching it with wasn't like that. I don't know who your fortune teller friends are, but
get him on the pod.
I was going
to
say,
on the Betfair show.
We need some tips from these people.
He supports Spurs. He's done it all in the wrong direction.
But I think that's a great example as well. That would have been an amazing experience. And I wonder whether the myth of that would be removed if you did actually have cameras and stuff like that in there.
Because he said it wasn't actually that. The reason why I chose the Milan one rather than the Liverpool one is because he gave some insight into that and just said, actually, it was quite downbeat. Benita said they were going to... Was it bring on Harman?
They'd be on something to do with Steve Finnan.
It was a slight tactical change, but it wasn't anything outrageous.
He said that they were so discombobulated at one point, Benita's named a team for the second half and it was like 12 players, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly.
One of them had got into the shower when they weren't actually being subbed off.
Yeah,
anyway,
yes.
Final one from Jonas Kuhl on Instagram. He says, he asks, did Marcus wear a chef's hat when he was out and about in Edinburgh selling sausages? Now, I think it was bacon you were selling, wasn't it? Was it several pork products?
Erroneous errors in that, as I understand it, because as I understand it, you would roam around Edinburgh selling bacon from a bucket.
Yeah, that's correct.
Door to door.
Yeah.
Two buckets. Was there a uniform involved, though?
Yeah, I think...
A white coat?
No, there was. We've talked
about
this
before. But not everyone does, because that's what they're asking.
I know. I'm very happy to tell the tale.
Doesn't sound like you are.
It was like a white lab coat.
And he had... Oi, fucking Walter White over there. Yeah.
As Jim once said, I can't remember if it was on mic or not, but I will say it was, what did you say, Jim? Well, look, we've created the perfect meat, you know, we're getting a child to sell it or something.
But were there sausages involved?
No, it was just bacon, and it was sorry,
take us through it from the start.
Okay, so it was my brother, I don't know how he got a bacon, someone was selling bacon, my brother thought this would be a good idea, we need a family dynasty in this. He took over the bacon round. You would have two buckets. You'd have one was smoked bacon, one was unsmoked. Smoked nice. Was in a red label. The unsmoked was in a blue label. Unsmoked was £1.48. Yeah. I mean, talking sort of
back
early mid-90s.
Back or?
No, back.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. More like the Danish style.
Yeah.
And then smoked was £1.52.
Right.
You had a pocket of two. The lab coat really was for the change.
Yeah,
right.
Cash only business.
It implies that you butchered it yourself.
It does. Yeah. But I think that the buyer
it gives the customer a fucking idea that, you know, you're a butchery.
Yeah, but they're thinking, no, it's probably his dad or something. You know, this is, but you had a little notebook of the people who were on the round, so it wasn't you didn't just knock on the door. Everyone you went to were waiting for the bacon to arrive.
Yeah,
obviously it was up to them. That maybe some people go, actually, maybe not today, or some people go, yeah, I'll have this. Oh, actually, have a pack of that, but usually people knew what they wanted.
But it was only bacon,
just bacon.
It's not like a milkman who does orange juice and bread and stuff.
Just bacon.
So Junas Cool on Instagram, he's very, very wrong. He's talking about sausages here. There's no sausages involved.
Exactly, and it wasn't roaming around Edinburgh. It was very much you were going to specific neighbourhoods which were close by. Presumably there was bacon boys all over the city.
Yeah, mm.
You couldn't move for them.
I didn't even know it was a thing until Marcus
said
it.
No, I didn't. And presumably there was no chef's hat involved.
There was no chef's hat.
Yeah, certainly. Like, you know. Local areas have their own little quirks, don't they? I remember we used to have a video van, and I know they used to have it in certain parts of Northern Ireland as well, but I've never heard of another place having it.
Yeah, I remember a video van.
So, like, yeah. Okay, there you go. So,
I don't know.
Are you familiar with this? So, no. If you're not familiar with it, a man would arrive in a small van, mulleted, generally. Mm. He would have a library of videos, possibly pirated, and then he would rent them to your dad. For less than the nearest video shop.
Yeah, so my memory of it was actually quite a big van. Like an oversized transit van, and you could go and he'd put a staircase down the back of the van.
Yes.
You'd go up into the van. They were all laid out like it was a shop, like a mobile shop. And then he would come back round again, like a personal service to make sure he got it back so there was no late fees. But producer Rory, who's also Scottish and grew up in Edinburgh, Marcus, says his friend used to deliver bacon in Edinburgh. So it's a thing.
Yeah.
Is there like a sort of old boys network? An old bacon boys network
WhatsApp group.
Stay in touch.
yeah.
WhatsApp group.
We're called the Porky People.
Yeah, the photo's just a pig.
The pork posse.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's the best time to end on it, Mark. Because I think you've answered people's questions there. That's all you can do.
I'm always happy to answer it.
Yeah.
Of course. Also did a paper round as well, but that's not nearly as amusing or entertaining.
Yeah.
There we are. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble Mailbag. We're back on Monday with a brand new ramble. Of course. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter, currently known as X, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram at Football Ramble, and subscribe on Spotify, and enjoy your weekend, everybody.
See you later.
Bye. See you then.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
so you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search Second Tier in your podcast app and hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.